We got a guest, Tony Sparrow, we're going to bring on in about a little less than a minute. He, New England Society for Psychic Research, it was founded in 1952. And the goal at first was to simply investigate hauntings. Then around 1965, the Warrens went into a home where the spirit of a little girl named Cynthia, and they listened to the little child coming through a deep trance medium. And she was looking for her mother. And somebody thought to himself, well, this is horrible. This little girl is earthbound. She's looking for her mother constantly, day in, day out. How do I help this child? And it was no longer just experiencing honey. The Warrens got involved. They wanted to help. Question arose as to where to get the knowledge to help anybody in spirit. Well, who delves into the supernatural? Priests, clergymen, rabbis? Ed started to interviewing dozens and dozens of clergymen of all faith. When asked them, if somebody called you from your parish and said there was a ghost in the house, what would you do? It reminds me of the Amityville Horror. But the Warrens are known for the Conjuring. Remember that? That was a big movie.
Oh.
Yeah. All right, let's bring on our guest, Tony Sparrow. Tony, good morning.
Tony, good morning. Good morning.
Hello. Good morning to you.
How are you today?
Hey, I'm doing quite well. Quite well. Thanks a lot.
You got those 10,000 cases there with you?
Yeah, they're all stacked up over here.
Look at that. This is a big day for you today, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a big day today, a big day tomorrow, because I'll be speaking at Southern Connecticut State University tomorrow night at 8 o'clock at Lyman Center. So, yeah, October and the beginning of November are busy times for us.
So talk about, there's got to be a lot of questions that people ask you, particularly when it comes to these investigations.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The first thing they normally ask is, gee, are ghosts real? Do you really believe in a ghost? And the answer, of course, is yes, positively we believe in ghosts. If you believe in God, if you believe in a creator, an almighty creator, you know, and I do, of course, then you need to believe that there is such a thing as a spirit. Mm-hmm. A ghost, in fact, is nothing more than a person who has lost their body. In other words, you are body and spirit, and when you pass from this realm, you know, your body will be gone, just like a snake sheds its skin, but it continues on. Mm-hmm. You will continue on in the spirit form. And of course, a ghost could also be something that's never walked the face of the earth in human form, too, you know?
Like what, for example?
Like a demonic entity, like a devil or a demon.
Oh. Do they look differently than spirits?
Well, they're spirits, remember. They're created by God. Yes, they look different, but they can look at anything they want to look at. That's the problem. The problem is a demonic entity, that's where the problem comes in, where it fools people. It can come in the guise of anything it wants to. It can come as a friend, as a relative. It can come as anything it would like to appear as to you, to suck you in, to start communicating with it, and that's a no-no.
Tony, when did you start all of this?
I started it actually in the mid-80s. I met Ed and Lorraine Warren because I married their daughter. I met them in 1979 at Jorgensen Auditorium in
Yukon.
Yep, yeah. Up in Yukon. And started to date their daughter. And she, after about a month of dating Judy, she said to me one day, hey, do you want to go see my folks lecture at Yukon? And I said to myself, boy, she's got two college professors for parents. I said, so your parents are college professors? She started laughing. She said, no, they're not college. They're guest speakers. They're going to be at the Jorgensen or the Warrens. And then the rest, as they say, is history. Because as soon as I met Ed and Lorraine, I was so intrigued at their stories and what they used to tell, because I went to see their first lecture. Mm-hmm. So intrigued by them, I couldn't believe it, what I was listening to, you know.
Wow. Yeah, I would
like
be
that?
Too. And you know,
and then you get a wife.
Yes, I was about to say that. I'm surprised that didn't scare you away from the family. You know?
Well, I was more intrigued by anything else. And remember in 1979 when I first met her, I was a police officer in Bloomfield. And, of course, I met Brad Davis there in Bloomfield. He doesn't, maybe you don't remember.
I've heard of that guy. Brad Davis, yeah.
Maybe you don't remember, but...
Well, I'm glad to meet you this morning.
Yeah, Brad doesn't remember, I'm sure. Maybe, but do you call a police officer coming into the radio station and handcuffing you to the chair? Do you remember that?
Oh, my God.
Do you?
Wow.
Yes. You got handcuffed, huh?
Yes.
That was me.
You were the one that handcuffed me.
Yes, yes.
I heard about this. I'm trying to remember who told me this story.
Yep, I was handcuffed.
Wow.
Yeah, he was getting out of hand in there. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like every day for that matter.
He was going nuts. He was causing a ruckus. So
that's Brad.
Me, and I went in and saw him, and he was on the air. Brad was on the air, and he got a little out of control. So I said, you know, Brad, let me see your hand. And he put his hand out, you know, he thought he was going to shake it, and I threw a cuff on it, and then I cuffed the other cuff to the chair, and he couldn't do his program properly.
My goodness.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I remember these things.
How long were you in those cuffs doing the show?
I don't want to remember.
I don't blame you.
Yeah, Brad was a tough guy back then. I guess he's still tough, aren't you?
Oh, as nails. He's a Marine. Once a Marine, always a Marine, Tony.
Then he used to come into Pluto's and then order breakfast before he went on his show in Bloomfield, and everybody was, he was very talkative. He talked to everybody there.
And he still does. He takes his coffee black, by the way.
Oh, good. So, that's good to know. So, Brad, I couldn't believe when I heard that Brad was still on the air after all these years.
Of course.
He's a staple.
This is number 60.
He's like the foundation of broadcasting, actually, in Connecticut.
I get to work with a broadcast Hall of Famer, legend.
It's amazing, and he still sounds great.
Doesn't he?
Yep.
Sounds like he did 40 years ago. 30, you know. But I want to go back to the spirits here.
Okay.
What happens, though, when... Can you interact with one? What happens when... are you allowed to... Or do they touch you? Can you touch... Well, you can't see them unless you use certain, like, tools, right? Or technology.
No, you can see them sometimes. Sometimes they'll manifest. And how they'll manifest is they want to grab the energy that comes off of a human being. In other words, the heat energy,
mm-hmm.
or electromagnetic energy that comes from the wires and the.
But what do they want? What are they trying to communicate?
Well, some want to just let you know what happened to them. You know, in other words, if a spirit, if a human being, for instance, was tragically murdered, say he was walking down the street and somebody walked up behind him and, you know, with a .45 automatic and shot him in the head instantly. He didn't even know that the guy was going to shoot him.
Mm-hmm.
That's just an example. He would be instantly killed. But his spirit, of course, remains.
No, I get that. But how would they communicate what happened years ago?
Tried.
They don't talk, right?
They try. A spirit will try to communicate by perhaps... Because they learn this in the spirit realm. It takes a while to learn, but it can be learned. Like to turn a doorknob, to switch a light on, perhaps, to communicate that way. And, of course, there's psychics out there that claim that they can communicate and talk to spirits. Now, I don't know if that's really the case, what that they're doing, or are they giving you a cold reading? Because some of the stuff that they tell you is so off base.
Well, yeah, and they have those TV, those cable shows on weekends, Hills Hunters or whatever it is called.
And you know what the thing is, too, is that, you know, how do you know if they're telling the truth or not? Like, oh, your mom says that she forgives you. It's all the same kind of stuff over and over. But they can get your attention. In other words, they can get your attention, like moving an object or something in the house. But actually communicating back and forth, no. I've never heard of a human spirit communicating back and forth. I've heard of demonic entities claiming to be human spirits communicating back and forth with someone. And for instance, like in the Enfield, England, not Enfield, Connecticut, Enfield, England, poltergeist case where Ed was called in. That's the subject of the Conjuring 2 movie, where Ed was in there with Lorraine in that house. Spirits were speaking to him out of thin air, and they were communicating and answering questions back and forth with Ed Warren. So
it's like a poltergeist, then.
Yeah, like a boy, but can communicate spirit. Spirits communicate. The answer is yes, if they're like demonic in nature or evil in nature or inhuman. God does not really allow a human spirit like you or me to die, come back and start having a conversation with your
right,
relatives
right.
every day. It doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. But they sometimes God will allow a spirit to come back to visit. I know it sounds funny, but what I mean by that is like a mother or a father and their son, for instance, or daughter is overseas in the war or in battle, and they get killed in battle. We've got a lot of reports where moments after that young man or woman was killed in battle, the parents see a visitation of that spirit, like say at the foot of their bed or wherever, appear to them and then vanish and then go away. Boom. That is actually a gift from God, because that is like a visitation. They're allowing the family to know that that relative, that son, that daughter, didn't really die. I mean, they died, but now you can see there's a spirit.
But that he's okay. Yeah.
He's still okay. And they come back to let them know that they're okay. Then they vanish.
See, I'd be spooked. Even though it's a good thing, it sounds spooky.
I know. It's unbelievable what you're saying.
So don't be afraid of ghosts. I ain't afraid of no ghosts. Afraid of ghosts, then.
The beautiful thing is, guys, is that you're never going to die. That's the beauty.
Well, right. Your spirit lives on forever. Only your body, your shell, like you were saying with the snake, you know. It's only your skin that dies, your shell.
Your shell dies. And so you will live forever and ever and ever, and that's the beauty part. But where you're going, that's another story. Are you going to heaven, or are you going to go somewhere that's a little bit more sinister?
Wow.
It's how you act in life that's going to determine that.
And that reminds me of the Amityville Horror.
The Amityville Horror, of course, you know, was 1975. November 13th, 1974.
Oh.
Ronald DeFeo killed everybody in the house.
Yeah.
Ronald DeFeo Jr. And George Lutz moved in 1975, a year later. And when George moved into the house, you know, George was a former Marine, too, by the way, Brad.
Really?
Yeah, he spent 4 years in the United States Marine Corps. He was a tough guy. And he was there, and they asked him when he was moving in. The realtor said, "You know, George, you know this. You know there was a murder here, and you know six people were murdered in this home." And George Lutz looked at them and said, "Yeah, that doesn't bother me at all. When the dead are dead, they're gone." And he's right. When the dead are dead, they're basically gone. You know, they're not going to hurt you. They can't hurt anybody. But it wasn't the dead that were causing havoc in the Amityville home. It was entities that were not from this realm, not from the earthbound realm, because Ronald DeFeo Jr., the one who killed everybody in his house, all his family members, he was a practicing Satanist, and he was doing satanic rituals in that home. So whatever he did drew something evil and sinister into that house. But yeah, Amityville Horror House was real. People say it was a hoax, but it was not a hoax.
Hey, remember, really, we only got about a minute left.
Yeah.
What about the Annabelle?
Well, the Annabelle doll is another case. 1970, two nurses in Hartford lived in an apartment complex in Hartford, and the mom of one of the nurses went and bought a Raggedy Ann doll from a thrift store and just bought it and gave it to one of the daughter, Donna, as a gift because the daughter liked dolls. And the problem was for some reason, they would come home from their shift at the apartment, and the doll wouldn't be in the same location that they left it, that Donna left it in. Like, in other words, she'd leave it on the couch with the legs crossed. She'd come back and the legs would be uncrossed. She'd leave it on the bed and she'd come back, it'd be in the dining room. So she thought maybe the superintendent was doing something as a joke to the girls, but he wasn't, because they would put scotch tape at the bottom of the door entryway and ways to see if anybody was in the apartment. Nobody was. But the coup de grace of the whole thing was, one day Lou was, what happened was they called a psychic in because the doll was moving around, and the psychic said, they had a seance, the psychic said, that's the spirit of a little girl that was killed outside this apartment complex in a car accident. Her name is Annabelle, she's in the doll.
Oh, my God.
That was not true, because God would never allow a human spirit to be within a doll, like an inanimate object like that. So one day, though, Lou was sleeping. Lou was the fiancé of Donna. He's sleeping on the couch, and at the other end of the couch was Annabelle. He wakes up with a start, and he starts sweating. He's, like, holding his chest, and Donna says, "What's the matter?" He says, "I just had a terrible, terrible nightmare. I had a nightmare. That doll there was putting slashes on people." I'm sorry, he didn't say that. That doll was strangling me. And as soon as he said that, he picked up the doll. He threw it across the room. He said, "That's just a Raggedy Ann doll." And when he did that, that's when slash marks appeared on his chest. Four on his chest, three on his stomach. like somebody took like a scalpel and made scratches on his chest, and you could see the blood coming through.
Oh, my
psychic
goodness.
Wounds, they call them.
And this actually happened.
It actually happened. And Donna and Lou were like,
"Whoa!"
And Donna's like, "Wait a minute, that can't be the spirit of a little girl in that doll. It can't be." And that's when they called the Episcopal priest in Hartford, and the Episcopal priest said, "You know, I don't deal with this stuff, man. I don't know what to tell you. Call the Warrens; they know all about it." And that's when Ed Warren came out with Lorraine, interviewed the girls, talked about everything that happened, and there's more to it, but I got to
We got 20 seconds left anyway.
And that's when he took the doll and put it in his museum, and that's where it resides to this day. But it has done things since then. That's the problem. It has done things.
In the museum?
Yeah, it's in the museum now, but it has done things that people have challenged the doll while they're in the museum, and that's why the museum, one of the reasons why it's closed.
Wow.
Allow anybody in there now, and, you know.
Well, this is fascinating. Let me tell you, I can't thank you enough for being with us on Halloween of all days as well.
Tremendous. I
really appreciate it, Tony.
Had a chance to meet you again.
Yes, Brad. I'm so happy to hear your voice too, because I'm so, you know, you're the foundation of broadcasting in Connecticut.
You got that right.
I remember watching the Brad Davis show when I was a kid, because I'm no kid now. I'm 69, so I remember watching the Brad Davis show and the kid. And you were great then.
I echo those sentiments. Thank you for being with us. We do have to go.
Very well.
Tony Sparrow, Director of the New England Society for Psychic Research.